It's good to have you all here today. I'm Greg Meyer, Pastor Jake Swell, and it's just fun to have everybody here. You like your seating arrangement? Yeah, we like to do this once in a while. It kind of reminds us that we're not an audience sitting in rows, but we're actually people here coming to connect to figure out life a little bit together. So, with fishing rods. That's interesting, Paul. Thank you. Melanie, who did our welcome on the video and has been doing it through the series, is absolutely right about this 20-mile mark in running a marathon. They call it the wall, as she was talking about. It's this point where, you know, biochemically, what's going on is all the glycogen your body can possibly store gets exhausted at about mile 20. And at that point, your body just says, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do anymore. This is it. You took everything out of me. Nonetheless, most marathoners finish. How do they do it? Well, it's two things. Basically, yeah, it's grit. That's the one thing. But how does that grit work? Is one is they knew it was coming, and two, then they therefore prepared for it. They know what to do to deal with it, all right? And that's what grit is. Grit is having the wherewithal to be aware of what's going on in life and what all this stuff that does get thrown at us so that we can be aware of it and thinking about it, not being so lazy. I'm not going to worry about what might come up tomorrow. No, it's important to think about those things. And then also being prepared to deal with it when it comes up. So that's what we're talking about today. And we are going to be talking about these mile 20 experiences, right? We talked about kind of just the whole concept of grit and how it's needed. We talked last week about the little things that trip you up when you try to get going and how so many of us fail in our commitments before we ever really even start. Today, we're talking about the real stuff. Well, we're not talking about the kind of grit that says, okay, you got to, you know, knuckle down and work a little harder. No, we're talking about the stuff that just says, you know, I can't go anymore. I'm done. Everything I thought I knew about anything is not true anymore. The game's been changed. I'm at a dead end. I don't know how to go on. And like Melanie said, if you haven't had that happen to you in your life, that is wonderful, but it's gonna. And there are people in this room that have it going on right now in their lives. So we need to talk about that. I think it's a really important thing. And you know, it affects us. It affects us in our relationships. It affects us in the dreams. It affects us in our careers. It affects us in our finances and the way that we think our kids could grow up or what we want to see happen in our lives. We have all these kinds of showstoppers happen to us. And we need to be prepared of, like, what are we going to do about it? In fact, our faith has an awful lot to say about it. So here's what I'd like you to do, all right? Right now, at your tables, I would like you to just to talk about what are five showstoppers? What are five dead ends? Five things that tend to derail people from whatever these big things, these big dreams, hopes, commitments are in their lives, okay? So you can write them down, and if someone at their table, this is part two to it, text me what your five things are, okay? Or if that's too much texting to do, my number is right up there. If that's too much to do, you can, like, just write them on that white paper and take a picture and text me your picture, okay? Got it? All right, so go. You don't have a lot of time. I'm going to give you, like, 5 minutes to do this. If you haven't finished up your list, decide. Don't worry, your list isn't going to be perfect. Someone else will fill in what you're missing. And send off that text or that picture to me. If no one on your phone, no one in your table has a phone, someone near you will help out. Okay, tables are reporting in. This is fun. Let me read you what people are saying, okay? It's obviously you know something about this. You've had some experiences, okay? So here's one table says, our thoughts. Ooh, that's interesting. Our own thoughts, our own inner little games we play with ourselves. People around us, preparation, or maybe lack thereof. Finances, prioritizing other people's needs. Got a photo here. Some nice artwork on the table along with it. Money and work, injury, health issues, time, lack of support, other commitments, competing commitments, family, children. Wow. I'm not going to be able to get all through this. I'm going to pull out a sampling here. Distractions, fear, lack of, and then dot money, time, health, self-confidence, support. The last one to come in was procrastination. self-doubt, fear, other people, comfort zone, too comfortable, not wanting to change, and wizards. I'm a pretty sharp guy. I did not see that one coming. Illness, job loss, unemployment, relationship risks, debt, reality, growing up, loneliness, loss, anxiety. Aaron, you don't count to five well. We got another one here. Surprises, unannounced situations, instant losses, changes. So we have these things in our relationships. We have them in our, you know, all these different areas. I'll put all these on Facebook later so you can see them. They'll also be on our website just to see what other people's things are. But one thing that just pops in my head just from hearing that is a lot of people noted finances, you know, and I can imagine foreclosures, job losses, businesses. One of the things here we know at Jacob's Well is that if your finances are a mess or just if you're not in control of your finances, then we know they're in control of you, and that means your life is just, it's not your life anymore. So it's one of our dedications to help everybody in our community, anybody associated with Jacob's Well, to have a budget they can live on and a way to get out of debt. And when they get off of that, when it falls out of whack, you have the support to get back there again. And we have a bunch of trained financial coaches. They're not money experts, and they don't advise you on what to do, but they know how to walk you through the process of being healthy with your money. So if that is a need you ever have at any time, just check in with us. You'll be able to find it on our website. It's kind of new, so it's not all set up on our website quite yet, but just be in touch with us. And one of these financial coaches would be glad to sit down and work with you on that kind of stuff. So that's really important stuff. So thank you for these. Thank you for being honest about these. Now, one of the things that we know and what our goal for this message today isn't to help you to avoid these so that these will not happen. No, these are things you can't necessarily stop from happening. They will happen. That's reality. The question isn't, you know, will mile 20 happen between mile 0 and mile 26.2, but what do you do at mile 20? And what's going to happen to you? How can you get beyond mile 20 so you get to the end? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And before we dive into it a little bit more, we've got a song, and Tim and the band's going to lead us in that I think will help us just get ready for that. Okay, if you want to pull out your Sunday papers and flip it over, you'll see an outline on the back. And I just want to read one verse, probably the most familiar chapter in the Bible, and that's the 23rd Psalm. And that this verse is one you probably have heard. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Valley of the shadow of death. I mean, that's what we're talking about today. I'm sure there's, in fact, I know there's all kinds of commentary stuff you can read about what the valley of the shadow of death is actually referring to and all stuff, but you don't need that. You know what it is. You just sent me a list of five of them, all right? That's the valley of the shadow of death, the stuff that says, I'm done. I can't go on. And what's neat here is this, the psalm isn't sugarcoating it. The psalm isn't saying, you know, these things happen. No, it says even though, you are going to go through it. You aren't going to avoid it, even though I go through it. But then it has this affirmation, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So this is an important thing. It's kind of interesting to know, in fact, that these are called laments, you know, complaints, basically. It's the most common kind of psalm in the Bible. More psalms are laments than anything else. It's a real part of reality. It's a real part of what God's people know that they need to be supported by God and how they need to support each other through. And so what this is talking about is, and how it fits into this series, is that we have commitments in life. Some are commitments that we just make consciously. Others are just commitments to being the kind of person we want to be, our hopes, our dreams, these aspirations we have. And we know that it takes grit to be able to follow through on them, to carry through on them. And we want to talk today about how it fits into all that. Because remember, commitments aren't just obligations and duties, stuff you're supposed to do. Commitments are, in reality, they are realizing possibilities. And that's why we're interested in them. That's why God's interested in them. Because those possibilities are becoming who you could be. They're becoming what God needs you to be in this world and what God hopes you can be in this world. So God cares about your commitments. Like I said, not because you're supposed to keep them, but because you can realize possibilities when we do, when we work on that together. You know, so there's all these things that come up and they just stop us, these mile 20 sorts of things. But it doesn't have to be that way. We can do things about it. And here's something that is, I believe, is absolutely true. And this is the first fill-in on this, the back there on your outline. It says, when you hit your darkest valley, do the opposite of your instincts. Do the opposite of your instincts. Everything about you wants to shut down. It says, we're done. I don't care. You know, but that isn't what you have to do. There is something else you can do. There is a way of getting through this, okay? But it's the opposite of your instincts. When you hit that, and whatever your brain is telling you to do, don't. Stop and think, okay? And in fact, the next line after it says, it takes grit to follow what you've learned, not what you feel. This is the basic. When you get to that darkest valley, the valley of the shadow of death, do what you've learned and not what you feel. Now, there's an important thing to note there. That word learned is past tense. The word feel is present tense. Present tense always trumps past tense. You feel like this right now. You learned that a long time ago, and you just totally forget about it. You drop it out. So that's where grit comes in. Did you really learn that? And what are you going to do to pull that past tense learning into your present so it can trump that present tense feeling? Because your feelings can't be trusted when you're there. They should be listened to, they need to be honored, but they can't be trusted. It's that learning that you've had in the past that is going to be the thing that's really important, the thing that's going to get you through it. And so I want to talk about just two instincts, and I think they're probably the most dominant ones that we have to be careful of, be wary of, and in fact, to find a different mode. And the first is to resist the instinct to withdraw. Resist the instinct to withdraw. See, God has given us huge skills as human beings, amazing skills to be able to do unbelievable things, to be resilient, to be exceptional, to cope with almost anything up to this point that we're talking about today, up to the shadow of the valley of death, up to those dead ends, those showstoppers. At those points, all your skills no longer work. So, you know, the question is, what was God thinking? Like God said, well, you know, I can only do so good. I'm sorry. I prepared you for all kinds of stuff. But when you hit those, you know, you're on your own. You're done. You're toast now. No, that's not what God did. God said, as a human being, you are amazing and you can do wonderful things. But you're going to get to some places where you do not have anything inside you that will help you to get on. And you know what I've given you for those times? I've given you each other. That's why we have each other. For when we can't do it anymore, there are people here that can. There are people that will drag us that last 6.2 miles to the finish line. They're going to walk us through it, teach us how to deal with it. And that's a really, really basic idea. God gave us each other. You were never meant to be a lone ranger. You were never meant to be alone. You know, as Americans, we think we're supposed to be independent. We should be able to do it ourselves, this self-made person. And it is a myth. It doesn't happen. We need each other. We can only get through life by pulling each other through community. We're created for community. There's a great story in the Bible, the story of Mary, the mother of Jesus. So she's a young teenager. She finds out she's pregnant. The angel Gabriel comes to her to tell her that, you know, oh, you're pregnant, by the way, and it was the Holy Spirit, so you might as well go tell everybody, you know, that this is good news. Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine Mary going to Joseph and saying, oh, Joseph, I know we're supposed to get married, but I'm already pregnant. But don't worry, it's not what you think, you know, or her family. I mean, at her day and age, to be found pregnant before marriage means that she could get stoned. She could be killed for this. I mean, she's in trouble. And she's got all the resources of a 15-year-old, maybe, you know, to figure this out and to know what to do. What does she do, though? I mean, if she's an example of anything is... So if you read the story, Mary was deeply troubled by the angel's message. I'm sure that's understatement. And she wondered what his words meant. Could you explain this a little better now? And soon afterwards, you just pop down to that paragraph. The next paragraph begins. Soon afterwards, Mary got ready and hurried off to Zachariah's house and greeted Elizabeth. All right. She immediately reached out. She got support from someone else. Elizabeth is a relative of hers, but that's not what's so important. She respected her. She's older. Elizabeth is also dealing with an amazing experience. She's got an impossible pregnancy going on in her life, and she's a little further along. She connects with someone who knows what's going on in her life, who knows her and cares about her and can walk her through this. It's a basic idea. But we don't do that. We have a tendency... Our instinct says, withdraw, isolate myself, because everything out there hurts, all right? And when I'm really hurting and I go and I meet someone, I talk to someone, I develop all these feelings and it just hurts too much, it's easier to just to go in my room and shut the door and just, you know, sit in that fetal position. And that's the wrong thing to do. It feels better. We think it feels better, but all we're doing is numbing ourselves. All we're doing is postponing the day when we will gradually have to deal with whatever happened in our lives, the foreclosure, the divorce, the job loss, the mental illness, whatever it is, we're going to have to deal with it sometime, and we're just postponing it, and we're stopping growing as individuals until we do. It feels good to isolate, but it isn't. The feeling is it's actually isolation is an infection. It's allowing the wound to fester. You think it's better because I'm not touching it. When you touch it, you know, that hurts. If I have an open sore, it hurts when I touch it, when I talk to someone, when I meet someone. But actually, those interchanges, that companionship with other people is actually the treatment. It hurts when you put a Band-Aid on. It hurts when you put the medicine on. It hurts when you clean the wound. But you're cleaning the wound. You're putting a Band-Aid on it. You're allowing it to heal, all right? Interactions with other people. We are treatment for these things, and that's pretty important to understand. As a pastor, I have seen so many times people get into these crises in their lives and stop coming to church. How many of you have done that? Can you be honest? Yeah, I tried to do it. I was a pastor. I had to come back. You know, I've seen them leave their group. Their group life group, because they were hurting too much. Yeah, it's a wrong instinct. Romans 12, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. This is something for us to be doing together. And one of the basic things is, you know, don't wait till you get into those tragedies because that's too late. Build your community now, all right? You get through mile 20 because you know it's coming. You know you're going to have to do something. You're prepared for it. Build your community now. It can happen. Is it ever too late? It's never too late to find the people that you need to support you. But it is so much easier if you have that meaningful, deep community belt there ready for you before you get to it. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how important that is. Group life is one of the things that we create in order to help you to do that. Group life isn't just another thing to do. Group life is doing life together. It is doing what you're supposed to do. Being, you know, you're created for community. How do you live in community? It's great to come to worship. It's great to be inspired. It's great to learn. But God didn't call you into faith just to come here and be inspired and learn. God called you into faith in order to connect you, to connect you with the people of God, to connect you with what's going on in this world. And group life, you say, well, I've got friends. I've got other groups. Well, you probably do. But there's something different about these intentional groups that have growth and knowing each other deeply and appropriately that is irreplaceable. I don't know that we can have other kind of friend groups that are there and that we continually come back to in order to be reinforced, that they're there to play that role in our lives when we need them. And we are there for when someone else in our group needs us to play that role as well. And also those group life, because of what we try to really talk about things that matter here on Sunday mornings. It's a time to continue that discussion. It's a time to, you know, have important things being a part of your group discussion at the same time. So we really encourage you to be a part of that. And that's part of why you're here today and round tables talking about that as well. So instead of withdrawing, you know, resist that instinct to withdraw. And instead of doing that, engage. All right, that's up. The feeling is up above there. It says, resist the instinct to withdraw. Instead, engage. And note, there's one of the. Sometimes people don't engage. Sometimes people don't come back to Jacob's Well or don't go to group because the people in their groups are total jerks to them when they're in those situations. I've been there, you know. And what that is that it's. Sometimes people avoid us when they're hurting because we don't know how to be present for them. This is something for us to learn. How are you going to be present for someone else when they are at that mile 20 part of their life? Two things I'm going to say about that, all right? One is, one part of being present is simply, you know, what? Knowing what to do, knowing what to say, okay? And one of the biggest things that I hear and that I've experienced is that, well, you know, people just don't know how to act appropriately to me. They don't know what to say. And I've heard all these hurtful things that people meant it well, whatever, but it just wasn't helpful. So what do you say? What do you say to someone when you don't know what to say? I'll give you two things to say. One is nothing, all right? If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. Just be there with the person. The other thing you can say when you don't know what to say is, I don't know what to say. Yeah, that's actually a legitimate thing to say. In fact, it's maybe the best thing you can say. A third might be something like, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Don't promise things that you're not going to keep. Don't tell people you're going to pray for them if you're not. But if you are, I think it's a good thing we can do for each other because God uses that and moves our spirits and pulls us together in ways that we would never understand. But those are some important things to know. So simply be present for each other, with each other. I'd like you to take a couple of minutes at your table and talk about a situation, it's up on the screen, share a time when someone was present for you or about times when it was difficult to know how to be present for other people. All right? And you probably don't, you only got a few minutes, so you're not going to have time maybe for everyone to share, but just someone who's got some ideas, put them out there and talk about that for a minute, okay? Go ahead. Okay. So that's some sort of deep stuff to talk about, some tough stuff to talk about, but I hope you got into a little bit. And one of the easiest ways to figure out how to deal with those times of really truly being present is to have some of those conversations with each other and, explore what's so hard about it. But it is so, basic is that this whole idea of being present for each other is what it's all about. Again, in Psalm 23, the valley shadow of death, what is it? I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. It's not because you will fix me, because you will take care of everything, you will take away all my problems. No, but you will be with me. Again, in both the Old Testament prophecies and in the birth of Jesus, the narrative says that this son, this child that will be born, his name will be Emmanuel, which means God will fix us. God will take away all of our problems. No, it means God will be with us. With us. That gift of presence is amazing, and it is powerful. And the fact that it doesn't take away all the problems is really fits into what we're going to talk about next. But I just want the fill in there between those is that don't just talk to the people, talk to God. Get to know God. God is a source of all this presence and why this stuff works. So it is, people, your group, or other people that want to walk through you stuff, they are the presence of God, but also you can really spend time with God's self. So develop your prayer time. Begin to learn how to read this book that God gave us, which is really, really difficult, but does show us the heart of God. Spend time. Develop your skills around that. It prepares you for mile 20 to 26.2. All right, so this next piece is, your next instinct that you need to resist is to control. To control. These showstoppers we've been talking about, whether it's finances or divorces or whatever, we call these uncontrollable circumstances. You know why we call them uncontrollable circumstances? Because they're uncontrollable. All right. You got that? Which means your ability to control them is probably not real good. All right. So if that is your goal, and how many people are Americans? All right. Yeah, your tendency to control may be up there a little bit high. All right? I mean, we like to have this figured out. We like to think that everything is working the way it's supposed to be working, but there are times when it is not going to, and the stuff that we're talking about today is no longer controllable. All right? We have maybe the best story about all this, which really comes out of our Jacob. We got Jacob's well, all right, that we get our name of, and the guy who dug that well thousands of years before the time when Jesus had the encounter at it was this Jacob who was crossing the river Jabbok. And I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but he's got to meet up with his brother Esau at this point. And it isn't good because he had done like everything bad to his brother imaginable. And he's just afraid when I cross this river, I'm in big trouble. But the night before he crosses, he sends everybody else ahead. And then I'll just read these couple of verses here. This man, angel, God, whatever, the identity keeps shifting. Obviously, it is a presence of God in some way. This angel came and wrestled with Jacob until just before daybreak. And the angel said, your name will no longer be Jacob. You have wrestled with God and with man, and you have endured, so your name shall be Israel, which means wrestler with God. All right? So your name will be Israel, and he touches Jacob on his hip and puts his hip out of joint, and the story ends by telling us that the sun rose as Jacob was leaving Peniel, which is what he called the place, which means I've seen the face of God, and he was limping because of his hip. All right? What happened to Jacob at the River Jabbok there that night was what we're talking about today. That was his mile 20. That was his showstopper. All right? And what happened to him? Jacob walked away from that experience with two things. He walked away with a new identity. He was no longer Jacob. He was Israel. He was now the one who wrestles with God. And he also walked away with an injury. He walked away with a new identity. He walked away with an injury. Those are really big and basic things. He didn't want either of them. He just wanted to get across the river and not get killed. But he ran into his mile 20, and he didn't beat it. He was beaten by it. And he was changed. Basically, that's the second piece. Resist the instinct to withdraw. Resist the instinct to control. Instead, be changed. When you get to these things, you can't control it. You can't beat it. Be beaten. Be changed. There's good stuff here in all of this. The book of Proverbs says this: trust in the Lord with all your heart. Never rely on what you think you know. You've got it all figured out. God says, it doesn't matter. It's not going to work. You're going to have to trust me on this. You're going to have to trust me on this. You see, it isn't God's job or God's purpose to make you happy. It isn't God's job, God's purpose to make you comfortable. I'm sure God's all for happiness and God's all for comfortable. But one of the problems is, for you to really grow, for you to change the way you need to change in order to become the person you can be, there's going to be some unhappiness. There's going to be some uncomfortableness between you and that place. And so if it comes down to deciding, are you going to become who you can be? Are you going to have that new identity and be changed? Or am I just going to let you be happy and comfortable? God always votes for change. And God says, when you go through the unhappy, when you go through the uncomfortable, guess what? I'll be with you. That's how it's going to work. And we need to be willing to do that. We need to be vulnerable enough to let ourselves experience that with each other. And that's some of the stuff that we're not always willing to do. So the truth is, you are not in control, but God is. And when I say God is control, I don't mean that God runs all the world and has everything all figured out and knew this was going to happen to you and don't worry, it was for a better purpose. No, I don't really believe that most of the time. I don't think that a lot of the things that happen to us, God wants to have happen to us. I don't think you can justify them or make them worthwhile by saying something good came out of it. All I can say is that God is in control, and God says that the last word will be life. God says, I will be with you, and the change that comes, the new identity, will be better than the one you had before. And I believe, even though I'm not a person who's going to sell you all anything you go through life is okay because you get to heaven on the other end, I'm not going there. What I'm saying is that if you trust God with anything in your life, when you get to that other side, even if that other side means life as you know it is no longer going on, it will be okay because God is with you. And God knows this better than you do. Tim has a poem he's going to read that I would like you to look at. You've got a long strip of paper on your tables. Tim, you want to? He brought this to my attention, and I'm not going to say anything. Let him read it. Follow along.
So this is Rainer Maria Rilke. He lived about 100 years ago in Germany, translated by Robert Bly, called The Man Watching. I can tell by the way the trees beat after so many dull days on my worried window panes that a storm is coming. And I hear the far-off fields say things I can't bear without a friend. I can't love without a sister. The storm, the shifter of shapes, drives on across the woods and across time, and the world looks as if it had no age. The landscape, like a line in a psalm book, is seriousness and weight and eternity. What we choose to fight is so tiny. What fights with us is so great. If only we would let ourselves be dominated as things do by some immense storm, we would become strong too and not need names. When we win, it's with small things, and the triumph itself makes us small. What is extraordinary and eternal does not want to be bent by us. I mean the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament. When the wrestlers' sinews grew long like metal strings, he heard them under his fingers like chords of deep music. Whoever was beaten by this angel, who often simply declined the fight, whoever was beaten by this angel went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that kneaded him. Kneading here is like bread. Went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that kneaded him as if to change his shape, that kneaded her as if to change her shape. Winning does not tempt this man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings.
Something to carry with you to group life this week and to talk about. It takes grit to trust God with enduring by being defeated. I'm willing to endure to know that I'm in the end going to be victorious. It takes grit to trust God with enduring by being defeated. Paul writes, I pray that you, together with all God's people, may have the power to understand how broad and long, how high and deep is Christ's love, and to be filled with the fullness of God, not filled with the fullness of what you want, not filled with the fullness of the popular American dream, be filled with the fullness of God, and to trust that that's there. So don't withdraw. Engage. Don't control. Be changed. There are people here who are waiting to be with you. Not to fix you, but to be with you. Look around. There are people here who need you to be with them. Not to fix them, but to be with them. To walk with them. To be part of the newness that they will begin. I'd like to ask you to join me in prayer, but first just to let you know, too, that you know, if you don't have that community, if you've never tried group life, I encourage you to try it. If you tried it and it didn't work, you know, that's just the way it is sometimes. Try it again. Maybe it needs more grit. Maybe it needs more commitment from you. Maybe it needs more focus. Let us help you help your groups work a little bit better. But there's information at these tables over here after the service, so come and be there. Join me in prayer. God, there's too much to say to almost say anything. But all of us have these hurting places in our lives, and we can see them coming down the pike. Sometimes they're in our past. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for promising that life is always the last word, even when we are defeated. Help us to be your people gathered together. Help us to be the person that walks one another across that finish line. Help us have the strength, the insight, the wisdom to seek that help and to be that help. And thank you for being that help for us. In your name we pray. Amen.